This is Sony Artisan of Imagery, Spencer Pablo, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 36. Nikon drops a bomb, and more from CES 2016. In this episode, Nikon surprises with a camera many have wished for. In addition to the D5, a new flash with radio tech in it, two new lenses, and an action cam. Olympus and Panasonic announce new cameras and lenses. Canon announces new PowerShot cameras, trying to put me to sleep. An update on Missouri professor Melissa Click. And Richard Prince gets sued. Again. All that and more in episode 36 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Spencer Pablo is a Sony artisan of imagery, a ridiculously talented photographer, a great guy, and I'm proud to call him a friend. To check out his great work, head on over to SpencerPabloPhotography.com. And I'd like to thank you for joining us here in episode 36 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And of course, we always appreciate you telling your friends about us. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Nikon made some pretty big, significant announcements on Tuesday, January 5th, 2016, and we'll cover them all here in this episode, of course. But before we get to the one that I think is really compelling, let's cover the beast that is Nikon's flagship camera, the D5. I used to own their previous flagship, the D4S, and it is a wonderful body. The D5 improves on that already great camera with what I'd characterize as an evolution more than a revolution. You know, these top-level bodies are more of a course correction that further make our working photographer's job easier and more enjoyable. Nikon's top camera features a brand new autofocus system, 4K video, of course, and an extended ISO range up to, get this, are you sitting down now? All right, ISO 3.28 million. Yeah, that's just ridiculous, and no one uses it. But the point here is that the more reasonable ISOs of 102,400, how about that, this camera's top in the native range is going to look incredible in comparison to previous models' ISOs. Now remember, as sensor technology improves, the ISOs climb higher and higher, and as long as they keep the megapixel count reasonable, these ISOs over time will continue to be cleaner looking. You pack more megapixels onto a sensor, you know, which doesn't change in size, of course, because it's a limited, you know, fixed area of real estate, and you defeat the whole purpose if you're going for really nice, cleaner, higher ISO. These bodies already have plenty of megapixels for what they're designed for. You know, these are mostly for photojournalists, sports photographers, etc. These aren't what you choose first if you're shooting landscapes. You know, it's overkill in areas that you don't need that for. So many go for the higher megapixel count stuff instead, the Canon 5DS, 5DSR, Nikon D810, etc. So the D4S was 16 megapixels, while this new D5 comes in at 20.8. So that's just over a 25% increase in resolution. And as a result, with the advancement in sensor technology, the ISO is able to increase. In this case, by two stops over the high ISO of 25,600 in the D4S. The D5 goes to 102,400. That's two stops. And for those who don't know, let's say you have a D4S and you can shoot at ISO, I don't know, 25,600, and you're getting 1/500th of a second, just for an example. So with the D5, you could be shooting two stops higher in ISO at that 102,400 level and be getting 1/2000th of a second. And in some circumstances, that could be the difference between stopping the action or not. And if you don't need that 1/2000th of a second, then you just shoot lower ISOs and you get comparatively cleaner images than the last model. So that is awesome. You know, that's what newer technology and a big bank account get you with these amazing flagship cameras. These bodies are speed demons, as you guys know. And the D5 handles its business at 12 frames per second, 14 if you're in mirror lockup mode, which most people aren't going to be, of course. Now, as for video, it can shoot 4K video at 30 frames per second with processing done by Nikon's new X-Speed 5 image processor. The autofocus system's been revamped, and it uses 153 AF points, which cover a large portion of the frame, and the company says that the D5 is its first DSLR with a dedicated AF processor. Of the 153 AF points, a very nice 99 of them are of the more accurate cross-type variety. And that's what you get when you drop a boatload of money in Nikon's lap for these things. You know, they get a boatload of money and you get sore wrists. You know, these are heavy cameras. These aren't mirrorless. You know, what's really interesting is the D5 is going to be available in two flavors, chocolate and vanilla. No, I'm just kidding. One is going to have dual XQD card slots, while the other dual CF slots. Now, personally, I prefer CF. They're big, they're solid. You can pretty much put them through a washer and dryer and they're still good. XQD, I don't know, not as much. You know, and I say it's about time that they made this move. Having one of each, not a pro feature. It's annoying. You know, you want redundancy and speed of use at that level. Fumbling with different card types is just frustratingly annoying. So it's nice that Nikon has finally listened to pros and people that have, well, you know, a lot of money for these things. And I can tell you that for those that the D5 is designed for, they're doing massive golf claps right now. They love this feature. This is going to be great. They're finally, I can just use CF cards or XQD and not have to fiddle with both. Both versions of this incredible, albeit not massively exciting upgrade that's the D5, will go for roughly $6,500 US, and you can pick one of those up sometime in March of 2016. Okay, this one took most of us by surprise, and I've got to say, Nikon is playing for keeps with the announcement of their D500, a camera long hoped for by D300S users, and this body delivers on that and so much more. Those hoping and praying for a D400 now have it, except for it's called a D500, as Nikon is clearly trying to brand this along with their D5 and D5000 flash. This new DX format crop sensor DSLR is, in my estimation, a pro-level DX body, as it shares a lot of the cool tech with the D5. Of this body, Nikon says, quote, "The new Nikon D500 establishes a new era of DX format performance," end quote. And there's no doubt about it. This body is the real deal. This is an exciting camera. You know, I hate to use the term game changer, but it really is. Much like my old Nikon D700 was, I think that this body is going to be a huge seller for Nikon and is going to have quite a following based on its capabilities. It does so much for the price point that they're pricing this at. Under the hood, the Nikon D500 has a brand new 20.9 megapixel CMOS sensor and Nikon's new X-Speed 5 image processing engine. Compared to its much bigger brother, the D5, this camera is smaller and lighter, of course, a whole lot cheaper, and since it's a DX format, the quality is not going to be the same, of course. But you get that 1.5x built-in crop for 50% more reach, something that's going to be incredibly useful for sports and wildlife photographers. As Nikon itself points out, if you pair the D500 with the new 200-500mm f5.6e telephoto zoom lens from them, it's like shooting a 350-700mm lens on the D5. Kinda, sorta. It's DX quality versus FX, of course, and there is a difference, no doubt. But you know what? Many don't care about that difference, especially if it's going to save you over $4,000. Now, while the D5 has an extended ISO range of up to a ridiculously high 3.28 million ISO, the D500 can go as high as 1.64 million. Now, you never want to shoot that high, of course, because it is ridiculous. It's like a snowstorm, and it's pretty much unusable unless you absolutely must get an image, such as in photojournalism, where a noisy image is better than no image at all, especially when lighting is like non-existent. All right, so let's talk about the usable ISO range. It starts at ISO 100 and at the high end goes to 51,200 natively. That makes this an amazingly great choice for shooting indoor sports, night football, etc., where you really need to be at ISO 6400 or higher to get a decent shutter speed. And you know what? ISO 6400 on this new camera is going to be incredibly cleaner than the top ISO on that D300S, and that was 3200. And that camera is so old now that it is going to be cleaner than many of the ISOs that were way lower than that. So if you're upgrading from that body, which came out in late 2009, by the way, you're making quite the jump in technology. That's a massive understatement, of course. I mean, that camera came out more than 6 years ago. So if you're shooting a lot of sports, action, or wildlife, you're really going to like this. The D500 is able to shoot at an incredible 10 frames per second and uses the same 153-point AF system as the D5. And since it's a DX body, you're getting AF point coverage across the entire frame from side to side. And since this camera has a larger buffer, it can shoot bursts of 79 consecutive 14-bit RAW files. That is a huge help for sports and wildlife shooters right there. And atypical of most DX bodies, the shutter is rated for 200,000 actuations. So, you know, it's going to take people years to burn through that many frames. And I think that most people are never going to hit those 200,000 actuations, even if you're shooting sports. That takes a long time to hit that. Now, if you're wondering about video, this camera delivers. It can shoot 4K video at 30p and 1080p at a number of popular frame rates. It has many of the pro video features that the D810 has, including picture controls, as well as uncompressed output via the HDMI port. What's new on the video front, though, is in-camera 4K time lapses, auto ISO smoothing, and the ability to send 4K videos to the card and HDMI out simultaneously. Nikon is also debuting a new technology it calls SnapBridge, which is designed for wireless connectivity and photo sharing. It allows you to pair the D500 with a phone, tablet, etc. via Bluetooth connection for easy transferring of your photos. You know, there's people that are going to continue to complain about this and do in 10 steps what this technology can do in just a few. But I guess they have a lot of time on their hands. I don't know. And these are the same people that complained about their DSLRs being able to shoot video. And now most of them rely on it. And in fact, there's more money to be made these days shooting video for clients than photos at the moment. So there's that, right? To the chagrin of many, like the D4 and the D4S, the D500 takes the more expensive Sony XQD cards in one of its two slots. And the other uses SD. I think that's going to be a pain for most people, but there's a good reason why the XQD is there, and that's the 4K video capabilities. Now, if you're shooting mostly stills, particularly if it's of sports, you're likely to load up on SD cards of at least 64 gigs or so and have a bunch of those available. Most just aren't going to be swapping out SD and XQD cards. That just doesn't happen. You're more likely to just use that SD card slot, use those big cards, and forget the other one exists. And I'd venture to say that 90% or more are going to shoot that way. I noticed in the photos of the D500 that they've completely ditched the pop-up flash. And you know what? Most people aren't using it. But in a pinch, when you need a flash and you don't have one with you, if you know what you're doing, you can make that work. And also, a lot of people were using the pop-up in commander mode to communicate with their other flashes and trigger those. I don't think that's going to be a deal breaker, but for a lot of people, that's going to be a bit of a problem for them. So Nikon ditches the pop-up flash. And of course, they want you to buy some of their actual hot shoe flashes. Cynical much? Yep. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see what Canon does. If they don't come out with a body in 2016 that's as capable as the D500, which includes 4K video and a lot of these other features, they're going to lose some sales to Nikon and the others. No doubt about it. Thus far, Canon has insisted on keeping the better video capabilities in their more expensive cinema line of bodies. But for how much longer can they do that? You know, your average Canon shooter that wants to shoot 4K video isn't going to drop twice as much or more on these high-end bodies. They're just not going to do that. You know, Nikon might be able to convince a lot of people now to come over from Canon because they're tired of not having 4K available in their bodies. So we're going to see what comes of this. Now, if this camera sounds good to you, and it's going to sound good to a lot of people, and you've got $2,000 US to drop on it, you can pick one of these compelling DX format Nikon D500s sometime in March 2016. So if you're interested in one, pre-order it or whatever, get in line early because it's going to be hard to come by these, I have a feeling. Now, if you're looking to get this with a lens, you might be interested in Nikon 16-80mm f3.5 to 5.6G EDVR lens, and that's going to be $3,070 US bundled with a D500. You know, like I've said before, I've given Nikon a lot of crap in recent years for not innovating, and while this isn't really innovation so much, this is a compelling body, no doubt about it. You know, we're barely into 2016, and Nikon has already wowed us with not only cameras and flashes, etc., that we knew were coming, but this D500, a camera that we really, and I honestly, didn't think was coming at all. For the longest time, people talked about wanting a D400, a replacement to their D300S, and it didn't look like it was at all on the horizon. And then they come out with this. Pretty exciting stuff, I gotta say. The big announcements, of course, were from Nikon, but there was indeed other gear announced at the 2016 Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, Nevada. Two were serious compact cameras from Panasonic, and the other a really interesting telephoto zoom for Micro Four Thirds systems by Leica. The Panasonic Lumix DMC ZS60, that really rolls off the tongue, eh? Is geared towards travelers, has 4K video, and a 30x zoom that's the equivalent of a 24 to 720mm lens, which doesn't exist, by the way. And all that is in a body that's just 11 ounces in weight. It features an 18 megapixel CMOS sensor, can extract 8 megapixel stills from 4K video, and has the company's new post-focus feature, which allows you to select your point of focus after the fact. I wonder how many people are going to actually be playing with that. Some people are going to take photos and they're going to spend all day on their computer touching the screen, right? They're going to be like, click. All right, that's in focus. Click. No, do I want the strawberries in focus or my child in the background? Strawberries, child. That's pretty much how it's going to go, right? It has 5-axis image stabilization, 10 frames per second in burst mode, and will be available sometime in mid-March 2016 in both silver as well as black for just $450 US. You know, that is just amazing. Think about the technology that's packed into this camera for that price. $450 and you're getting 4K video plus all the other things for stills. $450. Amazing. And as if that wasn't pretty sweet, the company's new ZS100, which sits a step higher than the ZS60, packs a larger 1-inch 20-megapixel sensor, shoots 4K video, of course, and has a 10x Leica lens with a 35mm equivalent range of 25 to 250mm. It also has the post-focus feature, adds 0.1 second light-speed autofocus, in-camera RAW development, and more for $700. It, too, will be available sometime in mid-March 2016 in both black and silver as well. Now, that's all well and good, but in my mind, the big news out of Panasonic is the new Leica 100 to 400mm f4 to 6.3 zoom for Micro Four Thirds systems, which offers the longest focal length currently available for MFT, offering a 35mm equivalent range of 200 to 800mm. Yeah, that's pretty nice. If you're shooting Micro Four Thirds and you're looking for a really long lens, this one has definitely got to be in the running for you. This new lens comes in a durable, lightweight body with a gapless build that keeps out dust and rain, a tripod mount that keeps controls fixed at your fingertips as you turn the lens, and an integrated hideaway hood, as well as a 240 frame per second AF motor. The new Leica DG Vario Elmar 100 to 400mm f4 to 6.3 ASPH lens will be available sometime in April 2016 for a pretty reasonable price of $1,800 US. I think MFT users are really going to love this lens. Can't wait till they're actually out there and people are using them. Should be pretty good. We'll see. As Petapixel reader RO points out, quote, "The bigger story here is that the Micro Four Thirds makers are starting to release some serious telephoto glass. While not fast enough for low light slash artificial light sports, I think birders and wildlife photogs should take notice as these kits are seriously smaller than the equivalent DSLR telephoto setups," end quote. You know, Micro Four Thirds has really matured, and as we're seeing in other areas of the camera business, some really amazing gear is now available. I say this all the time, but we live in exciting times. It is only going to get better. Photography is never going to get worse, right? The gear is going to get better. Techniques are mostly the same, but the gear keeps getting better and better. And while that doesn't make you a better photographer, it can inspire you. Gear inspires me, and I think it inspires a lot of us. Don't get gas, gear acquisition syndrome, as it's called, but use the gear to inspire you to create better photos. And we have so many great things that are coming out in 2016. It is just mind-boggling. And the great part is we're barely a week into 2016 as I record this. We still have the balance of 12 months ahead of us. Imagine what's going to come out this year. Incredible, incredible stuff. So stay tuned. Back in episode 20, we told you about how a University of Missouri professor made worldwide news after fanning the flames at a student protest by turning the protesters on the student media covering those protesters. She even went so far as to call for muscle, that was the word she used, to have them removed. That is just unbelievable. In that episode, I included audio that I received by one of the student journalists, Mark Scheierbecker, where he described the surreal situation that he experienced that day. Well, nearly 2 months later, over 100 of Missouri's lawmakers are now demanding that the assistant media professor, Melissa Click, be fired for the ridiculous way she acted that day. Remember, while it didn't happen, someone could have got hurt or worse. She unnecessarily incited those protesters, and thankfully the only casualty may be her career. Now, while the professor published an apology and resigned her courtesy appointment from the university's journalism school, that's not enough for the Missouri lawmakers. The lawmakers write, quote, "The fact that as a professor teaching in the communication department and the School of Journalism, Click displayed such a complete disregard for the First Amendment rights of reporters should be enough to question her competency and aptitude for her job. As a professor in the School of Journalism, Click's role should have been to remind students that we must respect the First Amendment rights of all individuals and that the student reporters were there doing nothing more than their jobs, jobs which are soundly protected by our Constitution. It should be evident that her actions are inappropriate, illegal, and unacceptable for a faculty member of the University of Missouri. We call on you to remove Click from her current position as an assistant professor of mass media. The university now has the opportunity to send a strong message that leadership can and will act quickly and decisively to root out bad behavior." End quote. All right, well, the lawmakers got that wrong. Acting quickly would have been removing her shortly after the incident nearly 2 months or so ago. So the university has lost credibility in that regard. And if you have to shame them into doing something, is that the same as them doing it on their own? No. No, it is not. Representative Caleb Jones told the Missourian, quote, "In my opinion, it's clear she violated this reporter's constitutional rights. It's also clear that she assaulted that reporter. The state's land-grant institution should not be employing people like that." End quote. And our readership apparently agrees. In a poll on Petapixel.com, we asked if Professor Click should be fired. And of the more than 1,100 respondents at the time of this recording, a full 85% of them said yes. Now, amazingly, a letter signed by more than 100 of Click's colleagues supporting the professor has been released. The faculty letter states that after Click apologized, things did not end there, and that, quote, "We believe that Click has been wronged in the media by those who have attacked her personally and have called for her dismissal," end quote. Now, that's ridiculous, of course. She was in the wrong, and her colleagues are backing the wrong horse here. But we often see this in academia, don't we? So it's really not too surprising. Educators often stick with each other, even as the ship is going down. Personally, I believe that Click is going to be fired. It's my opinion that she violated the constitutional rights of those student reporters, just as the lawmakers said. And you know what? I'm surprised that she's lasted this long at a university known for its incredible journalism program. I feel like it does more damage than good to back her, and they should have let her go a couple months ago when they had the opportunity, instead of being compelled to do so. And I think that really tarnishes the image of an otherwise great, storied journalism program. I don't know. Stay tuned. We'll let you know what happens. If you're an Olympus user looking for some long glass, you'll be happy to hear that the company has just announced a new 300mm f4 lens, perfect for your OMD. The new Olympus M Zuiko Digital ED 300mm f4 IS Pro is a durable lens designed to deliver incredible image quality. It's compact, dustproof, freeze-proof, as well as splash-proof, weighs in at just 2.8 pounds, and is about one-third the size and weight of an equivalent 600mm lens for DSLRs. It features built-in image stabilization that teams up with Olympus's in-body image stabilization to deliver up to 6 stops of compensation. That's pretty darn sweet, you gotta admit. Of the elements in this new lens, the company says it delivers, quote, "Olympus's highest ever resolution," end quote. Now, it also features their new lens coat called Zero Coating Nano, which helps reduce ghosting and flaring. And if you have $2,500 US burning a hole in your pocket, you can pick one up right now. Now, while you're at it, if you're looking for a knock-around camera to carry with you, Olympus has also announced the new Stylus Tough TG870, a rugged little bugger with a 16-megapixel backlit CMOS sensor that's waterproof to 50 feet, freeze-proof down to 14 degrees Fahrenheit, shockproof from 7 feet, and crush-proof to 200 pounds. And if you're worried about dust after all that, it's dust-proof as well. I know, right? Ooh, dust. This tough little camera has a 35mm equivalent zoom range of 21 to 105mm, which the company says is, quote, perfect for ultra-wide group selfie shots. So basically, this camera is for shooting selfies in some really crappy conditions. I tell you, these days, everyone's about selfies for some reason. We just can't get enough of seeing ourselves. I don't know. So if you're in the market for one of these, you can pick up this green and black selfie camera. For those who may be prone to dropping their cameras, sometime in April 2016 for $280 US. One thing I'm not going to be dropping is any money for this thing. That's going to be for someone else. I'm sure there's a market out there for it. Steal someone's photos, allegedly, and you may just get sued. And that's what's happened to supposed artist Richard Prince, as renowned photographer Donald Graham has filed suit in federal court here in the United States, accusing Prince and the Gagosian Gallery in New York City of copyright infringement. As we've talked about here on the podcast before, Prince has made the news for jacking people's Instagram photos, slapping on a comment at the end, and selling these derivative works as fine art, yeah, that's in air quotes, for upwards of $100,000 US. He's made a fortune that way, and people are rightfully miffed about that. So now Prince and the gallery, which showed off his works during the New Portraits exhibition, will have their day in court. The image in question at the heart of this suit is of a Rastafarian man smoking a marijuana cigarette, an image which had been reposted on Instagram by another user before Prince found it and decided to go for the five-finger discount, allegedly. The complaint says that the copyrighted photo had been used with the original image, quote, fully intact, end quote, with only minor changes such as cropping and wrapping it inside an Instagram interface. 14 months ago, when the photographer Graham discovered use of his photo, he posted saying, quote, how to credit a work, Rastafarian smoking a joint, copyright 1997, Donald Graham, hashtag Prince of Appropriation, end quote. Now we'll see if Price actually has to pay the piper this time around. As in the past, he's pretty much escaped harm and has shaken off lawsuits such as the one in 2013 when a court ruled that a prior appropriation of someone else's work by him fell under fair use. Prince and the photographer ended up settling that dispute out of court, though. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of this and if anyone else decides to go after Prince now. What I'd like to know is, why can't this guy actually go and create his own photos? Most of what he's been using have actually been pretty average photos. Now, I'm not talking about the one from Graham, but just in general. And he could have created things like these himself. But you know what? That's not as easy as a right click, mocking something up in Photoshop, and calling it fine art. And in my opinion, that's pretty unimaginative and lazy. Sorry. Now that Nikon has announced its D5 and the D500, I think it's pretty clear that Nikon wants to associate these three products with each other, and by breaking into the four digits now, there's plenty of room in the future for naming future flashes. So I guess they figured, let's take the leap, go straight to 5,000. This new unit marks Nikon's entry into the use of radio frequency in its flashes rather than infrared, thus extending the usefulness of these flashes to photographers. For forever now, their flashes were line of sight, you know, with infrared. So that wasn't ideal at all if you needed to hide a flash behind something or were operating in bright sunlight, because infrared and bright sunlight don't mix so well. The company says these new units will work up to 30 meters, that's about 98 feet, and when used with the WR-R10 wireless transceiver and a new D5 or D500, let's say, it can control up to 6 groups of up to 18 speed lights. 18 speed lights. Dream on, Nikon. You wish everyone bought 18 speed lights. Most people looking at the prices of these are like, oh, I can maybe get one in my lifetime. That's it. One at a time. 18. Come on. A very welcome feature of the SB5000 is a newly designed internal cooling system that prevents overheating when firing your flash in rapid succession. Now, that's something that's occasionally a problem with my SB900. When you're popping off flashes like crazy, it just shuts down on you, and then you can't use it for a while. This problem was kind of sort of fixed in the SB910. What it did is it just kind of slowed you down, basically, so you could still use flash, you just wouldn't be shooting as quickly or with as much power. But this new cooling system takes things to another level and allows you to shoot longer because it's got a cooling system inside. I think that's something we're going to see going forward in like all flashes. Eventually, they're going to make their way down to the really cheap ones too. Nikon is saying that this flash can handle up to 120 continuous pops, firing at 5-second intervals with ease. They've optimized the user interface, putting the most commonly used settings behind the I for info button. And if this all sounds great to you, you'll be able to pick one of these up sometime in March 2016 for $600 US. Yeah, that's a good chunk of change, huh? But listen, you're going to buy one of these if you need a workhorse. If you're a day-to-day photojournalist, or you're using a lot of flash, one flash, and you need automatic functionality, etc., this is something you would get. Otherwise, I usually recommend that people pick up an all-manual flash for about $100 or so and take complete control yourself of your flash photography. So you could have 6 Young Nuo flashes or one Nikon SB5000. Think about that for a second. If you're doing off-camera flash, let's say, and you want to do a 4-flash shoot, you're not going to buy 4 $600 flashes. You're going to go, you know what? I really need to hone my craft. I'm going to learn manual flash. And you can get those 4 flashes for about $400 and throw in some triggers. And you're still under the price of an SB5000. It's crazy. Announced with this flash was the new WT6A wireless transmitter, a device designed to help one beam their photos wirelessly at speeds of up to 130 megabits per second using the 802.11ac standard. It works at a range of up to 656 feet and is able to send your photos to an FTP server or a computer. You know, this is something you might use if you're shooting sports professionally, for instance, and you're on the sidelines and you want to wirelessly send your photos to someone up in the media room or in the parking lot. Heck, 656 feet, you could send this a long way. In HTTP mode, this new transmitter can be used to operate your camera, start live view shooting, and start stop HD video recording. They're going to be available sometime in March 2016 for the ginormous price of $750 US. Ouch, that is a lot of money. Nikon must be making a boatload of cash on these things. In addition to the other great stuff coming out of CES from Nikon, the company has announced 2 new 18-55mm kit lenses for DX crop sensor bodies. Now, these are the first AFP lenses from Nikon, the P indicating that these lenses use a stepping motor for fast and quiet autofocusing. And as if that wasn't cool enough already, it comes in a version with vibration reduction, also known as VR, and one without. These lenses are rivals to Canon's STM, that smooth transitions for motion lenses, which also use stepping motors in them. And these are perfect for people who want to capture high-quality video with smooth focusing and as silent operation as possible. That's very desirable when you're shooting video. These kit lenses have a 35mm equivalent of 27 to 82.5mm, so they're wide enough for landscapes and telephoto enough to be a decent portrait focal length. The VR version offers camera shake compensation that's equivalent to 4 stops, and while that'll add to the cost of that version, I'm sure, pricing and availability have yet to be announced for these two lenses. So stay tuned. Okay, I've given Nikon a lot of crap for its lack of innovation in recent years, which is true, and its penchant for distracting itself with nonsense like leather hot shoe covers, while others ate their lunch. You know, they seemed asleep at the switch. But 2016 is looking like it's shaping up to be a very interesting year for Nikon. The D500 is clearly evidence of that. There's like no doubt about it. And they've also announced something that's a bit outside the box for them. And that is their Key Mission 360, a waterproof 4K action cam for 360-degree photos and videos. With this, Nikon enters the action camera world with an offering that is wearable, waterproof, and can capture 360-degree footage in 4K. That is just incredible. It's rugged, as of course you'd expect it to be. It's waterproof down to 100 feet, resistant against dust, shock, and low temps. And get this, it has electronic vibration reduction to help reduce camera shake while playing video back through Nikon applications. Nice. See? That's innovation right there. Inside the Key Mission 360, is an image sensor and lens on opposite sides of the device. And when you stitch that together, the captured imagery form an immersive, ultra-high-def, 360-degree photo and video experience. Nikon's saying this will be available sometime in spring 2016, but hasn't yet announced exactly when or how much this thing's going to cost. Now, I watched the sample video that Nikon put out from this, and it seems to be a little bit distorted for my taste. But you know what? You're dealing with 360 degrees here. It's not exactly going to be perfect. Now, the Key Mission 360, I don't think, is going to have anywhere near the wide appeal that GoPros have had, of course. But I'm sure it's going to find a market. People are going to find interesting ways to use this thing. I know Corey Rich is. He's a Nikon ambassador, and he does some amazing things. You should definitely check out his work. Holy cow. Great, great work. And he's going to be all over this thing. I just have a feeling. There's no doubt about it. But for me, I don't know. I'm not exactly the target market for this thing. I'm not an action guy. Stay tuned. You know, when this thing is out, I'm sure we're going to be seeing videos of this all over YouTube. Hopefully they'll be interesting to watch. All right, Canon got completely overshadowed by Nikon's announcements at CES. But the company has announced 5 new PowerShot cameras for those that are interested in them. 3 are entry-level compacts, and 2 are the more mid-range models with more built-in grips and everything. The pocketable ones are not super exciting. Actually, none of them are, so I'm not really going to mention them. But the two larger, I guess I just did, the two larger cameras, the PowerShot SX540HS and the SX420IS, are 2 new super zoom cameras with HD video, built-in Wi-Fi, and NFC connectivity. The SX540 has a 50x optical zoom with a 35mm equivalent range of 24 to 1,200mm. That's pretty cool. Has image stabilization and a 20.3 megapixel sensor that can shoot video at 1080p. The SX540 has a 50x optical zoom with a 35mm equivalent range of 24 to 1,200mm. That's pretty impressive. Has image stabilization, a 20.3 megapixel sensor, and can shoot 1080p video. The feature that I think that a lot of people are going to find interesting about this particular camera is one called Zoom Framing Assist. It identifies your subject and helps keep them properly in the frame. So there's that. I'm sure it's probably a decent camera for who it's targeted at. You know, people that are looking for a super zoom, and especially since it's optical zoom, it's not digital zoom. So you're getting a full optical zoom out of that, good quality. It's just not a terribly compelling camera, I think, to most people. Now, if you want one, it'll be available sometime in March 2016 for $400 US. Announced alongside it, the SX420IS has a 42x optical zoom, which is the 35mm equivalent of a 24 to 1008mm lens, has image stabilization, a dedicated Wi-Fi button, a 20 megapixel sensor, and shoots 720p video. You know, I nearly fell asleep during that, and especially by the time I got to 720p, gone. If you're interested in this particular camera, it's going to be available in February 2016 for $300. I think, personally, spring for the other one. An extra $100 gets you a whole lot more. It also should come with some caffeine, because it's kind of boring. I'm not going to bore you with the 3 entry-level power shots that Canon announced. You know, they're colorful, they're small, and buy one for your mom. I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 36 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's L-E-N-S-S-H-A-R-K. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 37. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.